Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. I am really excited to welcome back our next guest to our program. Edie Weinstein is not only an individual who is not only inspirational, you probably have been following her posts online, but she's been able to help people literally around the world to not only to be able to stay focused, to be present, but also to enjoy all that life has in store for them. We're going to talk to her not only about the journey that she's been on, but also how what started off as a normal day in June 2014 really changed the way that she saw herself and what she was supposed to be accomplishing. If you're just hearing about Edie, we'll talk to you a little bit later about how you can stay connected with her. But Edie, hello to you, and welcome back to the program.
Can you hear me?
I can now, Edie. I couldn't there, but now
marvels,
I can.
Edie, yeah, the marvels of modern technology.
Yeah. Edie, I'm so excited to have you back on with us. You know, as I posted on Facebook, it's been almost now 5 years since the last time that you were on this program. Definitely, I think our lives have expanded since that time when we last spoke on this program. But Edie, one thing that has not changed for you is that the impact you've been able to have on others, either through speaking, through the written word, or the way that you've been able just to live. What has it been like for you to see the way that just by your being present and in living your life, how you've been able to impact others?
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because those of us who do this kind of work sometimes take it for granted. I think, okay, you know, I got to interview some pretty cool people, and I get to have a radio show, and I get to do all these things, but it's just what I do. And it isn't until I hear from people the impact that I have that I really recognize that. And I encourage your listeners to feel that way too, that you have no clue just by your presence, as you said, the impact that you have on someone else's life. If you smile at them, if you joke with them, like today I was at the bank and was making a deposit, and there was a friend that I could see through the window. I was going through the drive-thru, and she and I were blowing kisses at each other through the window, my friend Connie. And the woman, the teller, noticed it. I said, well, maybe she's blowing kisses at you too, and we got a good laugh out of it. And she said, when you were here the last time, did you leave a feather in the drawer, you know, like in the envelope when you returned the envelope? And I said, yeah, that was me. And we talked about the, you know, what a feather means to me, why I give out feathers a lot. And just by that silly little interaction, we both got a laugh and a smile out of it. So it's something that simple. It doesn't have to be anything profound.
Well, Edie, when did you discover that? Because I think that's the thing that stumps so many people. They think it has to be a big thing for them to be able to make an impact or to make a difference or to be able to affect the way someone's day is going, just like the interaction you had today. When did you realize that it really begins with the simple things?
Well, in childhood, my father grew up in South Philadelphia. He has, but if you think, you know, the Rocky movies and Yo Adrian, you know, that kind of very from the heart kind of experiences. And my father knew people everywhere we went. And he would always greet people. And even if he didn't know them, they became his friend. So I saw that just by being himself, he connected with people. And my father grew up in, as I said, in this neighborhood, blue-collar worker, no college education, graduated from high school, joined the Navy, became a boxer, became a milkman, a bus driver, all that. So he was a model. And then my mother was a model for being fully present with people. My father would have been back then, if they had had the diagnosis, an ADHD kid. He was all over the place.
Hello, Edie, you're there? Hello, Edie, can you hear us? Okay, it seems like we may have lost our connection there with Edie. We're going to try to get that fixed. One of the things that does happen sometimes with technology, so you all bear with us. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Conversations Live right after this. Stay with us.
Are you an author? Are you stuck trying to figure out what to do next to get your book published? Authors like you have a unique way of communicating. You are able to vividly express thoughts, even feelings, through your works of art. You want everyone to be able to experience your unparalleled perspective through words you have carefully crafted and labored over. Finally, help is here. Dan O'Brien and Amalgam Consulting is here to help you publish your dreams. Amalgam Consulting will show you how easy it can be to publish your manuscript. Whether it's publishing, marketing, editing, proofreading, or other services you may need, Dan O'Brien and Amalgam Consulting can help you right now. Contact Dan through his website at www.publishittoday.com. Publish your dreams today. publishittoday.com.
And we're back with Conversations Live with our conversation with Edie Weinstein. We're talking with her not only about the journey that she's been on, but what it's been like for her to share with others and to show other people how they can make an impact that she has been able to do. Edie is back with us. Edie, you were just talking about your father, and I had asked you about when did you first realize that this ability that you had, and you mentioned how it really began for you. Yeah, exactly. You know, it began for you at a young age. So, Edie, you know, when you look at the example of your father and you think about what you've been able to do since then, what is it that kept you moving forward? What is it that kept you being able to stay in the moment?
Well, I'm not always able to stay in the moment, but I have a lot of wonderful teachers in the form of friends, in the form of family members that remind me that this moment is all I have. That I can fast forward and project it, you know. And as a writer and a voracious reader, I sometimes read to the end of the book. I want to see what's on the last page when I read, and I try to do the same thing with my life, which is not always productive, because when I'm doing that, I'm not busy. I'm busy doing that and not being in the present moment. So I need to keep corralling myself back in, you know, reining myself back in, and say, okay, this moment is all I have. I don't want to squander it. So it takes reminders. That's what it takes.
Yeah. In January of last year, of 2015, Edie, you wrote an article for ElephantJournal.com called A Heart Attack Brings Aha Moments. And you take us into what happened to you on June 12th of 2014. What is it like for you now coming up on 2 years to that event? I mean, what is it like for you to reflect back on what happened that day and how that did change not only the way you saw yourself, but what you realized was possible for yourself and that you needed to do for yourself?
Well, as you said earlier on in the show, that day began like any other day, but didn't end like any other day. I was on my way to the gym, and I'd been going to the gym 5 or 6 times a week. In that regard, I'm my father's daughter, too. He was a gym rat. And even in death, he died. Both my parents are gone. My dad died in April of 2008, and my mom died in November of 2010. But he still accompanies me to the gym. You know, he reminds me to, you know, to work out. But that day, I was on my way home from the gym, having what I thought of as a normal workout, and I had these symptoms. Now, this is really important for women to know that these are different symptoms than men normally have with a heart attack. I felt like somebody had grabbed my jaw and I couldn't move it. I was drenched in sweat and I'd already cooled down from my workout. I had palpitations, lightheadedness, dizziness, and searing heartburn pain. And even with all those symptoms, I didn't go directly to the hospital. I drove home. Workaholic that I was back then, I wanted to be responsible and call and cancel with a therapy client that I was going to be seeing an hour later. And then afterwards, my next thought was, oh, I'm really sweaty. I need to take a shower. And then I was like, what are you doing, woman? Get to the hospital. And still, I didn't call 911. I did what I advised somebody never, ever, ever to do. I drove myself to the hospital. And that was, you know, totally irresponsible. I could have killed somebody. So, you know, the hospital, I reasoned that the hospital was only 10 minutes away. And then I said, well, maybe.
Hello, Edie? Okay, I think we may have lost our connection with Edie again. Again, one of those things that sometimes happen. Hello, Edie, can you hear us? Okay, yeah, it seemed like we did lose that connection. We are going to work to get that fixed. Again, one of the things that sometimes happens with live radio, but I want to say, though, at this point, for those who are just tuning in, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm speaking today with Edie Weinstein. We're talking with her not only about her journey that she's been on, as you just heard a reference a moment ago, she's not only an author, but an individual who's been able to motivate people, not only, of course, through words, but also through her own actions. She was taking us into what was, I think, a pivotal point for her back in June of 2014, where she not only experienced a heart heart attack, but an opening in many ways, I think, of ways that she had to be able to change things for herself. And Edie, you were just saying that you did what you would tell someone else not to do, and that is to drive yourself to the hospital for sure.
Right.
So go ahead and take it from there.
And again, I'm sorry about this. Sometimes, being someone whose work is in energy work, electronics don't always work properly around me, so I apologize for blipping in and out here.
Not a problem.
I stumbled into the ER, and I said, I think I'm having a heart attack. They whisked me up to the cath lab, inserted a stent, and which I now call my bionic body part. And during my hospital stay there, I had two pivotal events occur. One was that two dear friends, Phil and Janet, came to visit me. And Janet said, I demand to speak to your social worker. She needs to know what your lifestyle is like. You are not going back to work next week. I don't care what the cardiologist says. You need to take 2 weeks off of work. And then Phil, who's from New York, leans over the bed and says, you go back to work next week. I come over and break both your legs. And when they speak, I listen. So I took 2 weeks off of work, and my boss said, we don't want you back here yet. You know, we're not going to let you in the door. We'll handle your clients. Everything will be fine. And then the second was that I met with a nurse in the middle of the night. You know how they come in and wake you up to take your vital signs to make sure you're still alive?
Sure.
Well, she did. Mm-hmm. And in a 4 a.m. conversation, she said, when you recover and not until then, when you take time to heal, you need to go out there and educate women about cardiac symptoms, because one out of every three women in this country have a cardiac condition. Every 60 seconds, a woman dies from a heart attack. I beat the odds, and I decided afterwards that I was not going to let the heart attack go to waste. I was going to educate people. I was going to follow the instructions that the doctor gave me, so I did cardiac rehab. I still work out 3 or 4 times a week at the gym, change my eating habits. There's a history of heart disease in my family, but the biggest part of it was stress, feeling like I had to take on the weight of the world, feeling like I had to practice what I called savior behavior. And now I say that I've gone from being Wonder Woman to the bionic woman, you know, the bionic body part, which is what I call my stent. So I do a lot of education around that, you know, around not just cardiac care, but heart health, about taking good care of our own sweethearts, because I held everybody else's heart sacred and not my own. So that's what happened. And we're coming up on my second cardioversary on June 12th.
You know, I mentioned the article in Elephant Journal, what you call your aha insights, your after heart attack insights. There are three of them I want to mention. The first one, though, you just actually alluded to, and I think it's such a big one for all of us, I think, especially those who are overactive, like you and I and so many others out there, Edie. You wrote, I count each day as even more precious since I have become acutely aware that we never know how many will be granted us. How has this is something I've been battling a lot this year, because we all know the importance of being present. But then as entrepreneurs especially, we're always thinking about the what's next, how can I do this better? What can I do this? You know, how am I going to, where do I want to be at the end of this year, at the end of this quarter? How do you balance it? How do you manage to balance it, especially considering what you've been through?
Well, it does take balance, because I realized what a workaholic I was. Now, I've been working in the recovery field as a therapist for 30 years, and I am clear that I have two addictions. One is workaholism, and the other is codependence, and they go hand in hand. Working hard and workaholism is the only addiction that I can think of that's encouraged, because we need to earn a living. And I was spinning out of control with worry about how am I going to support myself. I was widowed in 1998, and I'm proud of the fact that I've kept the same house that we lived in. I've supported my son as a single parent. I've supported myself. I've been a social worker, and we are notoriously underpaid. So I've had to learn to reframe my understanding of what work means, that work can be meaningful and it needs to pay the bills, but it's got to be something that there is balance between work time and play time and veg time and, in my case, sleep time. I used to say that sleep was highly overrated. And back, BHA, before heart attack, I would sleep maybe 5 or 6 hours a night, work 12 to 14 hours a day, kind of like my father. And he lived to be 84. And I, had I continued, I would not have lived, I wouldn't make it to 84. I wouldn't have made it to 56, because I was 55 when the heart attack happened. So I take naps now. I rest when I need to. As a writer, I can write at 2 o'clock in the morning and sleep till 10, if the muse lets me, because she doesn't often do that. She wakes me up in the middle of the night to write. And those of you that are creative souls probably experience that too. But I have wonderful, again, my friends and my family are my treasures. They keep me sane and vertical, and they remind me about how important it is to take care of myself if I want to stick around.
Right. Such an important thing, for sure. The second one I want to mention of the aha insights that you shared in that article, Edie, is another one I think that so many of us have problems with. You wrote, "I have forgiven myself for what I can't change from the past and welcoming do-overs." I think so many times, and we should know better about, you know, holding on to things from the past and judging ourselves by things in the past and instead of looking forward. But how did that change? How did the way you did that change after the heart attack?
Well, I came to appreciate every moment. One of the things that I've learned is that everybody in our lives is on loan to us, that and every moment is precious because I don't know what's going to happen. My father used to say, you never know what tomorrow brings. And he was right. I didn't expect a heart attack that day. I didn't expect a heart attack ever because I thought I was taking care of myself, but apparently I wasn't. So as a result, I don't hesitate telling people how I feel. I don't hesitate letting people know that I love them or that they matter to me. I don't hesitate. I used to be afraid of what the propriety police would think. You know, if I was too effusive, if I was too emotional. And now it's not morbid or maudlin to think that, but none of us knows in any given moment who's still going to be in our lives tomorrow. So I count that as precious. I treasure my relationships. And, you know, my friends or family might think I'm too mushy-gushy, but I grew up in that kind of home anyway. So I almost don't worry about what people think anymore.
Yeah, I think, and that is so important for sure. You know, were you surprised at how much people's respect for you was enhanced after the heart attack? How you were looked at differently and even appreciated more afterwards?
Well, I have this push-pull, I wouldn't say love-hate, but push-pull relationship with attention. I love it. I crave it. I love being center stage. I've loved it since I was a kid, and it sometimes is embarrassing. I go places and people recognize me. Oh, I read your articles, or oh, I see you on Facebook. The funniest ones are the bathroom conversations where I'm at the sink washing my hands and people recognize me there. So that happens frequently. You know how people talk about their elevator speech, you know, when they share about
right.
what they're up to? I call it my bathroom speech.
Because
I run into women there who say, okay, tell me what you're up to now. You know, I saw this, I saw, you know. But I think when all of us are willing to be an example, take a stand, be a stand for love, for what we believe in, for the vulnerability, I think is a big thing. That I became vulnerable. I realized that I was not invincible when the heart attack came along. Now the funny thing is, I wasn't scared of dying. But what occurred to me was that the woman that I was died that day to give birth to the one that's talking to you right now. She had to die because I know this sounds bizarre, but she was killing me. The woman that I was back then, was killing me. Yeah. So I'm honored. I'm grateful. I accept, I've had a really hard time receiving. I have so many kind, generous, sweet, loving people in my life, you among them, thank you, that I'm willing to accept the love, because when we fill up our own cups, we can overflow into other people. So that's part of what I'm about, is just, being an overflowing fountain.
Yeah, and you definitely have been that. We're going to let our audience know how they can stay connected with you here in a moment. Edie, the final one I want to mention from this article, and for those who have not read this article from January 2015, you definitely need to. It's called, again, as I mentioned, A Heart Attack Brings Aha Moments. Again, it's published in elephantjournal.com is where you all can find it. This is a big one, and I think as a single guy, I don't have as much problem with this. Edie, I can imagine those who are married or those in relationships or those with children may find this one more difficult. I'm curious as to you how this kind of was enhanced for you. You wrote, "No has become one of my favorite words." Talk to us about how you discovered the power of no.
Okay, of no. Well, again, I flash back to the codependence. As a recovering codependent, not that I didn't think I was allowed to say no, but I didn't give myself permission to say no, because I thought that meant that I was a meanie, you know, that I had to say yes to what anybody wanted. And I wanted to be loved. I wanted to be the good girl. And in 2005, I discovered a workshop called Cuddle Party, and it's cuddleparty.com. And in 2006, I became a certified facilitator. And it's a workshop that focuses on communication, boundary setting, safe nurturing touch, and the power of saying yes to what you do want, no to what you don't want, and being open to change your mind. Now, even being a facilitator of this workshop, I still had a really hard time saying no because I thought I was expected to be on call 24/7 for people. I thought that if I didn't, it was insurance, you know, that if I was on call, then I'd be needed. I had an experience about a few months ago with another Cuddle Party facilitator who said to me, she was teaching another workshop, and I was kneeling on the floor in a circle, and she was behind me rubbing my shoulders, and I reached back to, you know, kind of massage her, and she says, put your hands back on your legs. I'm doing this because I love you. I don't need or want anything from you right now. And I went, oh my God, if she doesn't need or want anything, and if nobody needs or want anything, of what value am I? So that was a big lesson, is that I don't have to be on duty all the time. I could take a break, and your listeners can do that too. For those of you not, and I can't say that all, you know, all women are like this or all men are like anything, but those of us that experience this codependent frenzy need to kick back and say, all right, let yourself receive. It's a cycle. You know, we get all gived out if we don't allow people to nourish us. And saying no is part of that. It's saying no, you know, if somebody says, can you do this? Well, I can't do it right now, but in an hour I can, or tomorrow I can, and then follow through. And sometimes no is no, I can't do it at all. And it took a while for me to give myself permission to do that. So, yeah, that's a big one.
It's a big one. What was missing from this article that surprised me, Edie, I have to say, is fear.
Mm-hmm.
That you didn't mention fear for you.
And
I think one of the things that's so interesting about the work that you do, and I think it's so great, you are a lot more comfortable with yourself than I am. But I think that you have gotten to a place where you are so comfortable in your own skin. That is something I think that so many people attain to. I think they want that for yourself, and you've been able to help people through the work that you do. I know one of the things that we talked about when we were kind of coordinating this conversation is that one of the things that you've been able to do is sometimes even without clothes, being able to help people to become, you know, become better at themselves.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. I co-facilitate a workshop with my friend Beth Nolan called Love the Skin You're In, A Body Positive Journey, and it's a clothing optional workshop, which means people can come to it, you know, can sit in the workshop, clothed or unclothed. Beth and I are unclothed throughout the whole thing. And yet we have the option of putting our clothes back on if we want to. Now, it's a non-sexual workshop. It is a very safe workshop for adults and men and women together. And what I experienced, Beth and I just looked at each other blown out of the water about this, is how trusting, you know, people were of us, because we had no clue when people came to it what traumas, what experiences, what body image issues they had. And these were people with normal people bodies. This is not the French Riviera. This is not, you know, a hot sexual frenzy. It was not an orgy. It wasn't anything like that. And we were in tears throughout a lot of it because people were willing to be so vulnerable. And with our clothes off, we are much less threatening than with clothes on, and much more vulnerable. And for me, I taught hundreds of classes, never naked until this one. You know, we're doing it. We did one. This one was in Pennsylvania. We have another one in Virginia coming up in a few weeks. Another in New Jersey in June, and we're taking it on the road because this is so needed for people to be able to feel comfortable in their own skin. And when they're, you know, I call it peeling off the layers to reveal the real. People are more willing to be real if they're emotionally and physically naked. Just my take on it.
Well, what a powerful thing. And I think, again, thank you so much for being willing to share with us, Edie. I'm so glad that we've had a chance to reconnect. And I think one of the reasons why I didn't feel like it's been as long as it's been is because we've stayed connected through social media. And I've been so excited about the work that you've been doing, but more importantly, about how you've been able to help people to feel good about themselves. And I think we don't really get enough of that. And I'm so excited that you've been able to share your work, not only in person-to-person interactions the way that you are, but especially with the world through social media. How can our audience stay connected with you, Edie, and keep up? What's coming up next for you?
Okay, well, the first thing is my website. It's optimystical.com, www.opti-mystical, M-Y-S-T-I-C-A-L.com. I also have a radio show on Blog Talk called It's All About Relationships, and it's every Thursday night from 8 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's on Vivid Life, and it's www.vividlife.me. I'm also on Facebook as Edie Weinstein, E-D-I-E-W-E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, too, but I'm not really as active there. And I love it when people come and play in my yard is what I call my Facebook page.
Right.
People are welcome to visit and leave comments and interact because we're so connected now to people all over the world. And some of the dearest people in the world to me I met initially through Facebook. So I bless that as a venue.
Exactly. You know, last thing I want to ask you, Edie, for our audience out there is, I mean, I know that, you know, based on your own experiences and what you've been able to share, you know, it really does begin with realizing your own worth, your own value. What is your hope for audiences that they are able to take away not only from the work that you do, but also who they are?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that they know that they are loved, that they are not just loved, that they are loved. I'm sitting in front of, and you can't see it here, but on my wall, I have these little sticker things, like color forms. That's got the, what's the prayer, 1 Corinthians, love is patient, kind, whatever. I mean, I could send a picture of it to you if you want to see it. But the branch and the roots of the tree have the word love on them. So if you can imagine that that's who you are, that you are love incarnate, you're going to be showering on everybody, and you're not going to feel as badly about yourself as you might. You're going to be able to reach out to other people. You're not going to be isolated, because I think isolation is probably one of the worst diseases in the world, more than, you know, than the physical disease, is the emotional disease of isolation. So know that you are worthy of having all the love that you want in your life, and I just, you know, bless you and wish you bliss. I'm also called the Bliss Mistress, so I wish you
right.
bliss in your life.
Well, we definitely appreciate that, Edie. Edie, thank you so much for the time today. I really appreciate it, and looking forward to having you back on the program again.
Okay, before 5 years, that would be good. Who knows what will happen in the next 5 years. But and congratulations on all of your successes, Cyrus. I'm just delighted to see how amazingly you're doing. So take good care of yourself.
That. Thank you. You do the same thing and continue
right.
blessings to you as well. Really thank Edie for joining us today. And we thank all of you for tuning in to another edition of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off to air. The link is already available through our social media sites. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. For those joining us on the radio side of our program, check with your local station to find out when this hour will be re-airing for you. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.